roll call.
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Tom Moore.
Here.
Joe Omoasagie.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
Kathleen Worth Couch.
Here.
Joe Joachim.
Here.
All right. Everybody is here. Now is our portion.
I have to apologize. It's John Joachim. I'm sorry.
Is there anybody who'd like to participate in public participation? All right, seeing none, could I have an approval of the agenda? Moved by Tom, Susan with second. Are there any adjustments, comments? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. All right, for President's comments, I just want to introduce our new board members. We have Kathleen Worth Couch and John Paul Joachim. Joachim, okay. do you guys want to introduce yourself and just kind of maybe just brief background of just what you do? And if you could, yeah, when you speak, it's a button. Just make sure you turn on the mics. We don't use video. It's only audio, so it's really difficult. You can't even lip read when people don't do it. So
I'm John Paul Joachim. I'm a pediatrician at Carl Hospital in Urbana. I was actually born here at Carl and grew up here. Did my residency in Chicago at Rush University and came back down. And basically I've been working here for the last four and a half years now. So I'm always trying to volunteer in the community in ways that any way that I can be helpful. So and that's why I'm here.
Not sure if that's on. Kathleen Worth Couch. I'm a school counselor basically by day in Thomasboro and clinical counselor in the evening. I work for something called Healthy Strides. It's equine assisted therapy. I am a high school graduate of Muhammad, so I'm from the community. Have traveled around, come back, and want to give back to the community, so here I am.
Executive Director's comments.
Welcome back from our break. So it seems like it was only yesterday, and welcome to the new board members. I think we're this meeting is fairly light, and then the next two, the February meetings, will have presentations from agencies who have only been receiving funding since July. I think there might be one who's coming back to talk. They're in their second year of programming, and they're going to come also and report. So that's kind of nice. And then we're off to the races looking at applications for funding for the cycle starting July 1st. So I think at our next meeting, I'll be able to give you a list of all the applicants because their deadline is February 7, and we'll be putting your board packet together on February 10. So at the very next meeting, you should have a list of applications, and then we can talk about what you want to do with them this year. Anyway, I think that's all I should say for now, so keep the meeting short.
All right, so under new business, our first item is election of officers. And I guess at this point, I'll take nomination for president. Chairs the meetings. As far as the bylaws go, chairs meetings, signs, documents that they give you. as far as the bylaws go, what other description falls under that?
There's some pieces of it are in the bylaws and also in the intergovernmental agreement between the two boards. So the president and the vice president also work pretty closely with me on what's going on, if I need some support, also developing an agenda. The agenda's already it's kind of in motion anyway. Big important pieces of it are listed in your schedule. They're just things that we have to accomplish at certain points in the year. So building around that. But mostly it's signing contracts and talking to me about the contracts and any changes and then chairing the meetings, right? Well, there.
One at a time.
Yeah.
And evaluating.
That's right.
Land.
Well, that's this year, too. Yeah.
With that in mind, I think that I'd like to nominate Joseph Omosaki. Hey, Joe, how do you pronounce your last name?
The correct Edo accent would be Omosagi.
I'd like to nominate
Joe. I second the nomination for Joe.
Thank you.
Omosaki.
That's good.
All right, are there any other nominations? All right, seeing, how do we do this? Do we do it just as a motion, you know, we've done in the past?
Let me look it up in the
book. No, I think
we
have a motion, a discussion.
Yeah.
I think you ask if there are any more nominations, and then you close the nominations, and then you vote.
All right.
You know what? I forgot to say something. And the budget. That's the other thing. You still in?
Yeah.
All right. Since there's no other nominations, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Congratulations.
So,
it's very formal.
Well, you also have to vote for vice president.
So, any nominations for vice president? I nominate Kyle. Any discussions? Discussion?
Kyle's had lots of experience this year as vice president.
I'm in charge now. That was quick. Okay. Close the nomination and want to vote? Voice vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So, action requested. Contract. So, move to the next.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yay! Okay. We have officers.
Contract amendment report.
Yeah. This is very formal. It's nice.
I know.
We've got you.
You got me covered. Okay. So the next agenda item is contract amendment report. Would that be something you do?
That's for information only, and Mark prepared it. This is, you know, pretty straightforward. It's mostly contracts that you all approved for an extension of 1 year to the term. So this is our big. So our voyage into having a whole bunch of two-year contracts to see if that has a good impact on two things, stabilizing the situation for agencies, but also reducing the number of applications that we end up reviewing, and maybe we're moving toward a staggered contract term situation. But that's the majority of them. There's one contract amendment that just changes an address. That's exciting.
Yep.
Okay.
Silo list agreement on page 4.
So do you do a motion first?
Mm-hmm. Or do you do a motion first, or do you discuss?
And then you can discuss.
Okay. Anyone move to motion for the Silo? Second? Okay. Any discussions or modifications? Yeah.
I just had a question. Are these homes, I got the sense they're losing money, and how is, do we make that up in this negotiation, or, yeah.
That's a great question. This question is really simple, but it's the result of working with an attorney for the last year or so on just reviewing all of the agreements that we have related to the Scylla houses. So just the short of it is in 2014, we went through an RFP process. The two boards together bought two houses to use for Scylla. Right now, they've had four or three people each living in them. They tend to serve people with pretty complex support needs. The agency isn't doing a lot of business in this community, so one of their revenue problems is actually related to that, like that they're not quite to a scale. But the other is that the rent burden is a little bit high for them. So my suggestion here is for me to be able to negotiate with them for a rent below fair market value. In order to do that, I need your approval in the interest of the public health. And toward that end, I attached a couple of articles from the Chicago Tribune that show that the conditions of running these type of services in Illinois have actually gotten worse since we started on this project. So to your question, this rent reduction may not be enough. And if it's not enough, I would want to come to you again, because that would start to have an impact on the budget. Right now, it doesn't cost you anything to do this change. But if we go lower than this, it would. Then there's a certain point where we might even have to, if we went too low or changed the situation too much, we might have to do the RFP over again. And that's just, it's a really long process. And I think some of you have an interest in doing RFPs for other purposes. So I'd hate to plunge us into that if we don't have to. So my question to you is, can I start here?
And there's something else, too, there's so many variables. These two things may not be comparable. But when I was on the board of the CCAMR group home, which had a capacity for seven people, and, of course, we've gone toward fewer and fewer people in the group homes, if we had a census of six, we could stay in business. If it dropped to five, we started losing money. I mean, so now you're talking about four rent from four people or less. So that's part of it, too. And that has to be made up, and that's great. I mean, we should make it up, but that's just another piece of it. It's just simple math of how many people are there.
Yeah.
I think we need to do this, but I have a couple of questions, because we haven't really talked about Scylla's in a while, or if we did, I missed that meeting. And that is, I remember when we voted to purchase the Scylla's and to do this jointly with the DD board, at one point we were going to purchase more than two, mm-hmm. and it was too expensive in terms of the modifications. But our goal was to try and, at one point, to have at least four more Scylla's in the community, because so few people were being served. One didn't open for a couple of years because it wasn't possible to staff it. That's the one in Muhammad. That's not ours.
But you're right.
Okay. Where are we in terms of leveraging with the county or the state to try and expand places for people with developmental disabilities and mental health issues who can't live independently to live? And I don't want to get beyond, too far away from, yes, I think we need to approve this so that we maintain at least those eight options or seven options. But what's the long-term thinking, since the state is not being very responsive and we really can't afford to buy Scylla's?
And there are other issues related to purchasing Scylla's. It may be better in the future to fund agencies to purchase Scylla's, or to just buy a house for a person. I don't know the legal route to that, but I mean, there may be better service models than this one too. So the fact that we had to stop buying houses, they were too expensive, but also the problem we started to run into was the renovations that were required in order to make them licensable with the state. Under the state's rules for Scylla's are much harsher than for any other four people living together. So there's actually a lawsuit against the state for having rules that may violate people's civil rights just because they have a disability. But until those kind of questions are resolved, growth of this project really wouldn't make sense anyway. So, you know, it's just the same advocacy at the state level year after year. The problems are quite simple to name, but hard to fix. The rates of reimbursement through the federal and state program, Medicaid waiver programs, are far too low. They're among the lowest three in the whole country. And for 3 years, the state has been in trouble with the feds for that. So it's the same old stuff. The workforce shortage is not feeling any relief. There have been wage increases the last couple of years, but they're quite small, and now they won't keep up with changes for some areas in minimum wage. So so you start seeing the loss of agencies, and without agencies to provide the services, I mean, the system is sort of past crisis into, I don't know what the next word is if you've endured a crisis for 20 years. What is it now? So I really don't know the answer. I think legislative advocacy is really important, and I think we might have a champion in the legislature now. We're trying to, I and some of my colleagues around the state are trying to cultivate that person to do more work on behalf of people with DD, like not just mental health stuff, which is also really important, but people with DD. I'm sorry, that was a really long answer.
Mm-hmm. Tom.
Before you land. So what did you guys do?
Well, it got worse when the state didn't pay us for a long, long time. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I was paying payroll out of the sale of my mother's house for a while until the state came back and paid. But it damaged us so badly that we had to sell that group home to CTF, which now runs it. So small, you know, small groups do get just wiped out, yeah.
They're pretty reliable, so they can make enough to stay open.
Yeah. It's a economies of scale, yeah.
Actually, since that purchase, they merged with another larger organization, so they're all over the state. So I think that's how they stayed in business.
Julie. Julie. Mike.
I always just want to have a conversation. So I want to understand right at the moment, though. The financial implications for us are, at the moment of doing this, nil. Is that what you're saying? But they could turn out to be more serious, depending on what happens. So, and I'm trying to reconstruct, which I can't completely do, the conversation we had when we bought these homes.
It's been a while.
I don't need you to do the reconstruction now. I just want to make sure I understand so I can keep thinking about this. You're suggesting, though, that this might turn out to be not the best model for dealing with the problem that we're trying to address, that there might be alternatives? Is that what you're saying? You know, it's not a commitment to anything, just sort of wondering.
I think that small group homes in this community for people who have complex needs are really great. It's a great type of service. But with the current problems with the workforce shortage, that holds everything up. And we can purchase homes, sort of. I mean, it actually looks like the DD board is in a better position per statute to purchase homes than the mental health board is, which is totally flipped. It's different from how we approach this. But, you know, so there are just some things that maybe are completely outside of the services, the type of care that need to change a little bit. Like the the renovations that were required just to open the houses to pass the inspections that are associated with this were really burdensome. A couple of years ago, the state was talking about adding more requirements to the, it was the sprinkler systems that they're very expensive and they required completely rerouting the water. So like that right now, the state is being sued for having those extra rules. If that settles so that this is just a house that people live in, then this might be a really good thing for us to do. But right now it's just very expensive, okay. And then the staffing problem.
So I have to, just to follow this up to get myself up to date here. If we own these houses, right? I think we paid off the mortgage, is that correct? So we do have those houses as essentially capital investments, but we own them. So that's useful to remember. Mm-hmm. And we're not necessarily trying to make a profit, right? We're just, it'd be nice if we could just break even. That's mm-hmm. That would be the point, I assume. But I'm wondering now, what is the DD board's position with regard to this kind of approach? And do they have other things in mind, or are they happy with going in this direction, and so on? Or do we need a conversation with them?
That might be good. I mean, it's been a long time since y'all have gotten together. That it might be good. I think they share the concerns that you all have expressed. They did this morning approve lowering the rent this much, and me working with the agency to, you know, there's some other stuff that you don't have to approve, but I wanted you to know about that some of our contract boilerplate is outdated. So I just need to give them a contract that's up to date. You know, like in that work, I might find out that this is not affordable for them either. And then I would come back to you. So other than that, the DD board didn't really discuss it much other than that part that I might need to come back. I think the smaller group homes are, you know, have demonstrated great impact for people, but, you know, also like the eight-person homes are also great. It's just we don't have enough capacity at all in this community. So I wouldn't be surprised if you did all get together that, you know, this is a direction that all might want to look into again. But I'm sort of waiting for some, you know, like sort of kind of boring legal and statutory stuff to be cleared, so to make it easier if we do more of this.
Thank you.
A motion?
That's it. Yeah. All in favor? Or do we do it in, is it individual? Is it individual or is it just voice vote?
I think this is budget neutral, isn't it?
Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
All right.
So the Chicago Tribune articles are included because you probably already know all about what the content, but the big news is that one of these was front page news of the. I think that's really great that mm-hmm. people are paying attention to this issue now.
The board direction discussion. So where do we ought to go from here? Since we have a couple of new people and this is my first.
Well, I can
minutes.
Share what my thinking was.
Go ahead.
I met with Lynn about a week ago and suggested that since this was a light agenda, not wanting to keep us beyond 7 o'clock, that's not part of the issue, that it might be a good time for us to just do some visioning of what we would like to see happen or reviewing again what we think are some of the needs of the community and emerging issues that the board may want to address. And this all came to the front for me when there was the discussion of flipping Garden Hill schools with the international program schools. Mm-hmm. and the listening meetings that the superintendent had, and the points that came forward from people who had been very active in the district 10, 15 years ago when we had more wraparound services to support families. And I thought, you know, how did it completely fall out of discussion that one would actually begin to say, let's move the school that's in one of our poorest neighborhoods and change its function and purpose and bus students across town to a school that is going to be renovated but has not yet been. And it just led to, you know, some outrage. And to paying attention to what some of the speakers said, such as we used to have programs that would help families engage their children in schoolwork. We used to have programs where families would feel welcome coming to the school to find out more about services and resources. And this board has done some really, you know, interesting things based on creative proposals that we've gotten from the community. I think of Dream School, the Dream School Project, which provides some great summer programming to young boys in the community. The after-school programs that we have with Urbana Neighborhood Connections, Macy, and there's one other as well. Well, what we do with Don Moyers.
Yeah, Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah, Boys and Girls Club. I thought, well, here's a chance in terms of looking at what's going on in our community today. What are some other issues that might be of importance for helping us maintain a climate of mental health for families and for citizens in our community? And so just an opportunity for almost everyone to go around and say, if there was something I thought should be addressed in the community, this might be it. Not with the decision that we would prioritize or say, yes, we're doing it, but kind of getting the temperature of the board and the thoughts of the board about what do we need in order to have a community that has good mental health.
Makes sense to me. So it's open if you want to start. Go ahead.
She talks about mental health, good mental health for our families. And I like the idea of good mental health for our community. And so all of these things have even a broad, from my perspective, have a broader impact than just on the individual. Like we have to have a community where health is considered, is a priority. And if mental health is one of those, then how do we figure out, how do we get information, how do we determine what the real issues are, the problems are, how do we have listening sessions to figure out what kind of board we want to, would we like to be around these kind of particular issues and end up with a more healthy community.
Elaine?
I don't know how this, you know, how we do this exactly, but I want to mention a book I've just read, a memoir called Suspended Sentence by a Kentucky woman, Janice Morgan. I read some of this in draft. I know her. And it's about having, it cuts across a lot of programs that we have something to do with, because it's about a single mother who has a son with bipolar disorder, which leads to substance abuse, which leads to the criminal justice system, which leads to drug court, which leads her to NAMI. And she doesn't have an axe to grind, so she's not blaming anybody. So it's an interesting look at how just an ordinary person, except she was a professor, so that means that she had some knowledge of systems and, you know, how to go find information. So she was ahead of some people. But the takeaway point for us is that this young man was not diagnosed as having bipolar disorder until he was in the criminal justice system. And then, you know, they were sent to specialists and told, well, you know, there's a pre-bipolar syndrome that could have been seen. And she was going to he was going to Montessori schools. He was going to good schools. So we have talked before about the need to catch things early, you know, to put money early in a person's life rather than wait till something happens and put all the money at repair. So this, if anybody wants to look at this book, it's an interesting way that she negotiates her way through all of this and is still, the young man is in his 20s now, and you know, still struggling. But I was really struck for us by when do you get a mental health assessment instead of just saying a child is misbehaving, you know, could have saved them certainly a lot of suffering.
Go ahead.
So I guess John's the only one who doesn't really know my platforms or whatever, because Kathleen and I have known each other for a few years through her work at Thomasburg Grade School. So this is a safety net, so these are my opinions. So a couple things that obviously I feel like I've been an advocate on this board for is role, mental health, and things like that. I'm a big advocate of, yes, for Champaign County, you know, we need to serve Champaign-Urbana, but it's far more than just those individuals. You know, the suicide rate and things like that of farmers is extremely high. Anyone who's related to a farmer, married to a farmer, whatever, knows it's not an easy life. People think farmers got it easy. They don't. So we really have to look at the rural health. You know, small school districts, they don't have the social services. Some of those people don't know how to get to the social services. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, my squeaky wheel. So I went from Thomasboro, which is affiliated with Rantoul. I've seen a lot of firsthand stuff there at the high school in Rantoul. Now I'm in Homer, and so it'll take me a little time to kind of weasel my way through there and find out kind of where their needs are. So I'm kind of still the rural chick who's going to be like, hey, let's get out of these Champaign-Urbana area. Something we have kind of talked about to our two new folks is we'd like to see Champaign-Urbana governments maybe throw a little cash at some of these things. You know, we do a lot of money, you know, support for, you know, the anti-shooting and all this. And yes, every bit of that we need to continue to support, but we need to also ask others, hey, what are you ponying up and helping us with? You know, what are you helping with? We talked a little bit about let's prevent stuff. Let's catch these kids before they are in the system. I think it's great we have these programs, but doggone it, what if we would have spent a little time, you know, I don't know, buy some mentors some pizza. Here's some gift cards. Why don't we try to do some things before these kids are in the system? And again, I'm kind of a firm believer that we also need to work on the culture and even giving parents the tools. Because so many times we hear this is a mental health problem, but then I wonder, is it really a mental health problem or is it a parenting problem or a culture problem? So I think we're doing fantastic things. I mean, I've only been on this board for a year, but I'm amazed all the things I've seen that we're a part of, and I'm excited about the things that I feel like I can try to help, you know, improve or whatever.
Tom, go ahead.
Well, one thing, since we're just doing vision stuff, that I thought about is we've probably been involved with the criminal justice system now for about a decade. And we have this council that's been looking at incarceration and mental health. I have no idea what they're doing, but we have this council on ourselves. What I've discovered lately, and this might have something to do with what Jane says, you know, there is a, in spite of the fact that incarcerations are actually going down, mm-hmm. believe it or not, but no, crime is going down. Mm-hmm. Incarcerations are continuing to go. Mm-hmm. To go up. And there's a movement in the country. A lot of these places, a lot of these facilities for incarceration actually happen in rural areas. They're building them like wildfire in rural areas as opposed to building them in urban areas. And if you follow anything in the news lately, you'll see that Rikers Island, which is probably one of the most famous prisons in the United States, is closing. In the 1900s, they used to have about 22,000 men there a day. Now they're down to 7. So they're closing, and they're going to build smaller prisons around New York City and house them there. But the interesting thing that's happening is that there is part of this movement is to not favor incarceration and instead favor giving people, providing resources for people so that they can stay out of the criminal justice system altogether. And one of the things that I know that our council has been talking about is having mental health services in the jail. Well, part of that movement is we don't want them in the jail. If you talk to advocates and activists about this, they don't want them in the jail because then you still have to get arrested in order to get mm-hmm. the services. They want to have money available for these services. And they're not just mental health services. They're education services. They're for employment. They're for housing. The things that people need to make a living. So if we're going to have this council, I'd like for us to have somewhat of a discussion with them about this notion of providing services versus incarceration and having those services not in the jail, but having them located throughout the community. At least from the conversation and from some of the work that some of the institutes are doing, they're saying that we will not make our community less safe by not incarcerating people. And that runs counter to everything that we have gained nothing from having people incarcerated. So actually, there's a great quote by Clarence Darrow from 1902 that says, prisons have accomplished nothing. They don't do anything that they say that they're going to do. So I'd like for us to kind of think about that. And you even have some legal officials, like prosecutors, saying, hey, we need to steer people away from the prison system, or in our case, jails, and get them involved in these kinds. So I'd like for us to, since we are already involved in that system, and since we think that it is related to mental health, I think we ought to use our influence to see what is the best way for our services to be utilized by the criminal justice system.
Okay. Julian?
I hardly know where to begin. It's really complicated.
Julian, we have time.
my observation
no, we don't have a lot of time.
Has been that the mental health service, the reason we have mental health services in jails, and that's often the only place that actually can serve the people who are in the jail. I mean, they don't get served when they're out of the jail. So I agree with Tom that we need a way to reach people when they're not in the jail. The reason we have them in the jail is actually to serve the needs of the jailers. That's my observation, because these people are a pain in the neck. They're difficult to manage. They create chaos. So it's a way that jailers have hit upon to help in the control of the population of people who are actually misplaced by being in jail. It's not that they don't get in trouble with the law. It's that the reason they get in trouble for the law is not going to be solved by having mental health services in the jail. Sometimes those services, they work better if what they're designed to do is get people served when they're out of the jail. But how you link that is very difficult. And so I think the same thing is true in the public schools. A lot of times what we're talking about are the what you were describing with the Garden Hills and the controversy there. I think, well, you're an expert on schooling yourself, so I think I would, I'll take a stab at saying that schools are among the least likely places to change, because everybody who's there is trained to do just what they do, and they're not trained to deal with the people who are from the neighborhood unless they make specific, assertive efforts to get to know the people from the neighborhood. And what that often calls for, whether it's mental health services or education services, is not necessarily the kinds of activities that the people who work there are trained to do. So unless we're willing to create a more open system, and I don't think we have control over that, that's all the systems, we could get involved in community discussions with other human service settings and human service people, but this is way beyond our capacity as a mental health board to deal with. You know, we can talk about, the best thing we can do is probably talk about what we think the problems are, but I don't think we're in a position to, I guess what I want to say is in some ways an impossible task to think that we can prevent mental health problems. It's very difficult to do because they're created by so many different unpredictable things. And what they are created by is the nature of the society that we live in. So I can have a lot of views, but most of them are not going to be popular views. I mean, they'll involve what will look like. Talk about the county, that people outside. I am completely sympathetic to the mental health needs of people who live outside of Champaign-Urbana, but in Champaign County. But I am at the same time totally nonplussed by the fact that the people who live outside of Champaign-Urbana tend not to want to support politically, socially, or economically the kinds of services that you think they need. So there's a disconnect here, and the disconnect is not one-sided. That's a problem. Yeah. I'd be happy to figure out how to address it or think about it, but I don't think I'd want to say that it's because there's not a concern for the mental health of people who live in rural Champaign County.
Okay. Kathleen?
Hi. I know I'm new,
but go ahead.
I want to speak up. I'm working within the rural school setting as not only a school counselor, but bringing a mental health practitioner background to them. I'm seeing that once they get an awareness that, one, there doesn't need to be a stigma attached to what's going on, they have a desire to get better once they know better. And what I witness needed in that rural setting is funds to go in the direction to provide mental health services. Like I know were provided at a school such as Garden Hills. A colleague of mine was consulting, and he came in and brought mental health services to the school setting while the school counselor could focus on the academic piece. And the problem is, what I'm seeing, I have the skill set, but working K through 8, there just aren't enough hours in the day to meet the academic needs and requirements for scheduling and things of that magnitude. And if I had the ability to place a mental health therapist in each rural school, like Champaign-Urbana has presented as successful, I think that we would be able to tap into reversing the mindset that a public school setting is not the place to try and reach people, because I think it's a prime place. I just did a behavioral screener on 5-year-olds, and it has given us the ability with something that is research-based to start to provide early intervention in the setting where students need to be and have to be, so it takes the element of option out of it for the families. So it's a good step, and I don't want to totally negate it as a viable step, and therefore I'd like us to keep rural public schools as well as Champaign-Urbana schools at the forefront of recognizing it is a viable place to provide mental health services, and they need funding beyond public school funding.
Go ahead, John.
As a pediatrician, what I can tell you is we see a lot more anxiety and depression than we've seen over the past couple decades. And so in the last 5 years, I've had to treat so much anxiety and depression. It's something that in my residency I didn't have to deal with as much. And a lot of us as pediatricians weren't as comfortable treating mental health, just because that was in training seen as, okay, that's psychiatry, they take care of that. But if you ask any of us, most of the people that need it the most are Medicaid recipients or people without insurance. And even if you do have good insurance, it's going to take a long time to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist for treatment. And so a lot of times now we have to kind of triage who can we treat ourselves and who needs to see psychiatry. And even with that, it is a long process to see psychiatry. So oftentimes we were consulting and talking with psychiatry to treat patients until they can get in with them, unless, you know, it's something that's immediate that they have to see urgently. But it's a problem in the medical field to get that resource, because Medicaid just does not reimburse psychiatry the way it needs to fill that need. And until that happens, it's always going to be a gap. So one of the ways we tried to improve that was we have one of our pediatric psychiatrists, Dr. Aruna Shalom, came and had a conference with us for pediatricians just to better train us in treating mental health. And after that, we really just kind of expanded our ability to treat more patients so that we can decrease the burden on psychiatry and decrease that wait time. But even with that, it's still a long wait. I don't know other hospitals how I know Chrissy does a good job, their pediatricians, in treating mental health as well. But again, it's just there's still a lack of psychiatry for the more complex patients. And I think the reason why we have more is there's just more toxic stress in families nowadays. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of things that are, you know, stressing families out that we can't treat as healthcare providers. It's something that's going to take a community to solve, and it's not going to be something that the mental health board can do alone. It has to take, you know, the Champaign government and the Urbana government and all the other governments. And the schools. It's going to take, it needs a combined coordinated effort. So, like, as a pediatrician, we talk about adverse childhood experiences and how that shapes the brain. And so, like, if you think about the brain as a road, you're in the first 3 years of life, you're shaping the highways. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you're taking off ramps and making little side roads and side streets. But if you put a lot of toxic stress on the pregnant mom and the child when they're growing up in those first few years, it's really hard to make big changes after that to decrease their anxiety, their depression when they're older. They're more predisposed to a lot lot more problems. And so it's just a sign that we need to put more resources to take away those stressors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things like trying to reduce domestic violence, trying to address substance abuse, if you have a person that is have an incarcerated family member in the home, you have, mm-hmm. that's one of the adverse childhood experiences. Yeah. So if we can reduce those, we can hopefully reduce toxic stress on the family. And that can decrease the mental health burden in the long term. You know, this is not something we're going to see the result of in a year. This is going to be like 15 years or mm-hmm. 18 years where you have to wait for the kids born today to grow up as adults to see that we did a good job and we made a difference. Mm-hmm. So when we make decisions, we have to kind of keep that in mind. But we should make sure that we have objective markers that we can look at to see if we're on the right path or not. So we can always change course. It's okay to be wrong. Mm-hmm. As a scientist, it is always okay to be wrong. But you need to know how you know you're going to be wrong, mm-hmm. how you know if you're right, so that you can make the change.
So I always ask, what's the right question, or what's the question you need to ask? And I think in thinking about this over the years, I mean, I spent most of my life prior to working at Parkland, working with children in the county and also locally in the schools. And we don't have as many of those services any longer. I mean, there's always that financial burden that we no longer have. I mean, there was a program I worked with through Project Etc., and Project Etc. went through the local schools. I worked in Muhammad schools, and I worked in St. Joe, and I came out to Thomasboro once or twice. But I also worked with the Champaign Urbana schools. I worked with Susan Zola when she was a principal at Dr. Howard. And those were all things that we all can make this better. However, we don't seem to have the community resources or the community desire to work together to make this work. When I facilitated or organized Operation Snowball, we had kids from the county. We had Thomasboro kids. We had Paxton kids. That's not even Champaign County, who would come in on Tuesday nights to come to this meeting once a week. And when we had our retreats, we had kids from Piatt County and Paxton is in Ford County come out to the retreats in Monticello, and not just talking about the Champaign-Urbana kids and the Rantoul kids and the Thomasboro kids and the Muhammad kids who would come to these retreats. But we don't have that organization any longer. So a lot of times it's a lack of willingness to work together. Champaign-Urbana kids are going to interact with county kids. County kids are going to interact with urban kids. And if we don't figure out how to make it work, there'll be a problem. Julian?
So now I want to say something positive.
Hey, Julian, please stop. Stop.
Seriously. I think that we do a really good job with the resources that we have. That, I mean, we have, what the dollar amount mm-hmm. is. So, but I think the reason I think we do a good job with it is because we're very responsive to other people coming and saying, this is what I want to do. And it's not every one of those programs no single program is going to solve mm-hmm. or necessarily help very much with the mental health problems. But when you have a bunch of different things going on, especially the variety of things, that means that more one thing is not the same, it's not good for everybody. So I think, you know, professional services like psychotherapy, for example, are probably great for some people. For other people, it's nonsense. It makes no sense in their lives. Whereas some people will need help with babysitting or help with affordable housing or help with after school programming or things that you don't necessarily think of as, quote, therapeutic. Yeah. But nevertheless, all together,
yes.
this is what we should be doing is supporting many small things. And the one thing I want to say before I stop, and then okay. I'll stop.
Okay, because I was going to cut you off.
I think that what makes these programs work the best is when the program is listening to the clientele that they claim to serve, rather than coming down and saying, well, this is what we want to do. Yeah. So in some ways, I think we could improve our services if we require, the more we require or expect the service agents or individuals that we support to demonstrate that they're engaging in an open way with their supposed clientele so that they're connected in a way. I think that makes for the best services.
Yeah, I mean, and in the times that I did a lot of this work as a one-on-one person, that's what we did. We went to the homes and we talked to parents and we provided housing, we provided clothes, and we provided food. And when Project Etc. had an alternative school and an after-school program, and so there are models out there. I mean, part of how Circle Academy, which is part of Cunningham Children's Home, came about was through kind of an offshoot of Project Etc. because it went out of the funding, lost funding, and it became part of a Cunningham day school system. And so Cunningham has done a lot to try to take over some of those things, but as a community, we have to almost like insist that we have a collaborative. If you're going to get this amount of money, what other agency are you willing to collaborate with? If this is the Champaign-Urbana School District, do we have Champaign and Urbana schools actually really collaborating? And so there are ways in which, if we give this money, then let's ask some questions. How best can we do it? I mean, the ACE scores, I mean, are important to have. I mean, everybody know coming into your office. I mean, I don't know if you guys do it as pediatricians, but having young men and women knowing that, okay, dad or mom has been incarcerated. They've had a loss in the family. Someone is addicted to substances. Someone has completed suicide. Those kinds of things affect the child in the long term. Even if the child was 2 or 3, it still will affect that child if we don't start providing the services that help make or buttress this to make it better. Tom?
I just want to make a comment about, I think, I understand what Julian's saying. The point is, the more diverse programs that we have, the more likely we are to be successful in some areas, because this is a very complicated process. But I think, aside from that, underneath what he suggested, if we can capture it, it might be hard to, is that there are a lot of things that are happening in our society that work against people being successful. And you don't have to have mental health needs all the time when you're not fitting in. Like, I'd be curious to know what's the difference between the two populations of this Garden Hill swap. Who was being swapped? Mm-hmm. In the same way I don't know if you've heard about this million-dollar blocks, where we've spent, in some of our larger cities, we spend $1 million for a city block to incarcerate and keep people incarcerated. And the researcher who does this work says, and who do we incarcerate? We incarcerate the poor and the powerless. Mm-hmm. So that's a society issue. That's not that the people who are living in those societies simply need mental health. We have a great program in our community right now that works with reentry, people coming back to get into the community. and it's called First Followers. You know, we don't give them mental health services. They might, but what they really try to do with them is give them, is help them, of all things, fill out a job application to get housing. And do you know in the city of Champaign, if you're a landlord, you can refuse housing for 5 years to someone who's a felon. So, like, if you don't have, and if you're a felon, you can't live with other felons. And if you're in public housing, you can't go to, you can't go to public. Okay, so now, if those things exist, what do you think is going to happen to that person? So they do those kinds of things. They do education. They do transportation. So one of the things I think underlies this feeling that Julian's saying we can't do everything is because what we can't do is we may not be able to make those changes in society that needs to be changed. However, what we do is have influence, and we can use our influence, not our money, but our influence as a voice of mental health professionals to say these are the things that are affecting our society in a very negative way. So I don't disagree with those things, and I think that the diversity of programs is really significant. Keep that up, but let's not dismiss what happens to people and, that they can't control.
Thank you. I know we could continue this conversation. Thanks for giving us a chance to talk about things that we feel passionate about and we want to make a difference about. So moving to the next, or the agency information.
So hello, good evening, everyone. I'm for the new board members that I haven't met. I'm Julie Cartel. I'm the director of mental health at Rosecrans, and tonight I'm here to tell you that after 22 years at Rosecrans, I have submitted my resignation, effective in a week from now. So first of all, thank you all for the many, many years of collaboration and coordination and working together, because all the conversations happening around the room right now with you guys are so important, and all the work that we have done together, and I know you guys will continue to do, I'm very optimistic about. But it is a time for me to step away. Lots have has been going on in my life, and more recently some very tragic stuff that I need to take the time away to attend to. But also with the very good news that if you haven't heard, we had a search for an executive director. That's another transition that's been happening at Rosecrans, and we have hired an executive director, Joey King, who is the interim CEO at the Pavilion. And so he will be taking over, I think, February 10th, have we heard? Yeah, I think early February, February 10th. And there is a plan to replace my position as well. And so that will be one of the first tasks, I'm sure, as many for Joey to take care of when he comes on board. But also I wanted to address some recent comments that I have heard in a couple of meetings I've been in that Rosecrans is cutting their mental health services. And there is absolutely no truth to that. And I hope it wasn't tied to my announcement of my resignation as that became evident, because that has nothing to do with it. And if anything, we will continue to grow. We're posting for positions in our outpatient mental health. That recently has been an area where we have been struggling. We have openings, and we've had a challenge with not getting qualified applicants or any applicants. And so we have not been able to admit people into our outpatient counseling that we have done for years. Partly a workforce issue is really impacting us. So we're currently posting. We hope to fill. We continue to have our mobile crisis response in a four-county area. We are continuing to struggle with a financial model in which the state gives us to operate under. But we're committed to trying to make this work. And so I just want people to know there is no decline or plan to cut any mental health services. And if anything, we want to continue to grow. But we can't grow quickly yet until we get some positions filled. So So that's my announcement. And I love all the conversations around school-based mental health. That has been my passion for 10 years. So if anybody wants my opinion around that, I'd be happy to share it. Because we were in many, many schools, including Thomasboro, at Garden Hills. We were in most middle schools. We are not any longer, and there's lots of reasons why that is. But I believe in school mental health. That's one of the places where I think we could have a big impact. And so anytime people want to talk with me, I'd be happy to talk. But again, thank you all, and I'll be here for the rest of the meeting if anybody has questions afterwards.
Thank you. Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Julie, thank you for your many, many years of service, and your commitment is also represented by you show up at all these meetings, which have to be extra to the work that to your really work. So I've always appreciated your involvement. But I do have one question: is the workforce issue a problem with what we pay people?
I think, and it's not unique to Rosecrans. I know I have talked with Pat Egge and some other people who are facing the same challenges. And so, particularly for Rosecrans, we've done a lot most recently in terms of upping pay, enhancing some other benefits that staff have said would be helpful. So we've responded to that. But community mental health work is tough, and we have seen some of our very good therapists move into the ever-growing private practice model. The group private practice models are really pulling a lot of our therapists into those positions, and so that has been a challenge for us to maintain or keep people for any period of time. Typically, once they get their clinical license, they tend to move on into private practice or the group private practice model. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. But thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Mm-hmm. And anyone else? Old business. So it's page 18. So the family model.
This is the report provided by Pat Egge from Cunningham on the progress so far. I don't think she's here.
She's not here today.
I don't think I could answer questions from it.
Yeah, I had a conversation with her on the side about it. But yeah, go ahead.
I just note that it's positive that they're hoping to have their first clients next month, which is about 2 weeks away. So it will be really helpful to get a report that talks about the first sets of clients that, that come into the program.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
More information.
Yes, Julian?
Yeah, I think that, at least on paper, they're moving in the right directions.
Yes.
They seem to have, and they're pretty grounded, I think. So and realistic, I think. So I think your comment about Cunningham's historical contributions is maybe this is, you know, yet another thing coming out of that pretty grounded model, I think, for this community.
Yeah. So they've moved from being an orphanage to a lot of different things.
So we'll see.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ask them about their telemedicine model, like how financially stable that is, if it's better than having a psychiatrist there, because they lost their psychiatrist, Dr. Ramirez, and had a little gap period, but then they got a telemedicine psychiatrist, I think from Chicago, mm-hmm. and that's really been beneficial. And I don't know if that's something that, I know this is kind of going back, but for maybe the rural health and other areas mm-hmm. to be more financially successful or sustainable, to have psychology and psychiatry resources through telemedicine might be something that yeah. we might look at as a possibility in the future.
And that's something that is been coming up. But also probably with the rural areas, the internet coverage.
That's a big legislative priority right now.
Mm-hmm. So.
And that's something that we asked for on your behalf last year of the legislature, that they really do connectivity across the state, because the areas which have lost psychiatrists and other providers especially during the 2 years without any state funding, some communities lost them and will never get them back. And if telehealth is to be useful, people have to be able to get on the internet. And mm-hmm. yeah, so hopefully that work is going to start as part of their capital infrastructure projects this year.
Okay. We'll find out soon enough.
Allocations 19 to 22. So, what do we do with that?
The tentative schedule for this year, it's obviously up for grabs. If these dates don't work, we can change dates. We do need to give as much advance notice as possible, and if there's a pattern, it's important that we mostly stick to the pattern that's part of advance notice. So the next meeting is a full regular meeting on February 19th. Page 21 is sort of the breakdown of, there are certain things that we want to make sure we get in front of you at certain times of the year. So in February, the most important thing is looking at the application, figuring out how you want to review applications, if you want to review applications as you have done in the last couple of years. And then the we have on this list discussion of liaison assignments, which for the last 2 years it's been fairly casual. You can go to whatever agency board meetings you're interested in, but that's a good discussion point with a new president. You might want to do it differently. And then we start these updates from agency programs. And I do think Cunningham will be doing one of those on February 19th, and you could raise that question. And then on the 26th, it's a study session, only presentations from agencies on the new programs. So then after that, we're really rolling with looking at applications, and we'll have an annual report for you to look at in March.
Your board information.
They met this morning. They did approximately what you're doing tonight.
Okay.
That's all.
And that works.
Big stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, approval of the mental health board minutes. So moved. Second. All in favor? Aye. The staff reports. Any staff reports? Mark's not here. Kim. We need to.
Just if you have questions.
I don't have any questions. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I had time over the break to read Lynn's report, and it was very long, but extremely helpful to understand the variety of things that you do and how integrated your activities are across the community, mm-hmm. Not only within the county of Champaign, but within the state of Illinois and within the nation. And so I'm glad you're writing maybe an annual or semi-annual report, because it'd be a lot to read every month. But yes. It was really, really helpful. And I also just wanted to note, too, to the other staff, Stephanie and Chandra, who are here, and to those who aren't, that I find the reports that we get monthly or every other month to just really help me understand the workings of the staff in the agency. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time to write those reports. I don't know that we always have questions about them, but I feel so much more informed and don't have the questions I had 5 years ago about, well, what do you do? So just a comment of appreciation and affirmation.
Julian?
I definitely agree with and want to say that the best way to figure out what's going on here is read those staff reports. Mm-hmm. There'll be all kinds of stuff referred to, sometimes with just a single sentence that might lead you to wonder about it, but it's, at least in my, just I'm saying this to the new folks, mm-hmm. it took a while for every one of us to figure out what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we sort of know, but you feel like you're not really sure. And the staff reports hint, they can't always spell out every detail. And some of the things they say, though, if you have curiosities about them, ask the staff about them, because there's usually a big story behind these short reports.
And Julian usually comes by to find out.
I find them useful. That's all I mean to say.
Yes, there's always a story behind it. Board to board reports. Yes, Elaine.
I have been to the last two community coalition meetings, and won't go into all of the stuff, but every time there are new people and new groups that show up that are mm-hmm. presenting. So that's another one of those things where if you want to keep up with what's going on. And there was emphasis the last time on the goal of becoming a trauma-informed community. Mm-hmm. We were talking about asking the right question and asking not what's wrong with you, but what has happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was made, kind of went down through the various groups that presented. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I did was go to Chandra's mental health first aid training mm-hmm. and Kyle did too. So anybody who hasn't been, I got home and thought about what a good place to start. And
yes.
then I read the rest of the manual that we didn't have mm-hmm. time for. And I'm still thinking about the application of those principles. Mm-hmm. So very, very good training.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the mental health first aid. I mean, having many of the schools and their faculty be involved in it because it helps. Because if we're talking about suicidal ideation or just self-harm, many of the schools ought to be there.
So there's good news because the schools are now required to, under this new Mental Health Act, to actually get mental health first aid. And so they have shortened it to 6.5 hours for the education component of it. So,
now there's a bill to implement teen mental health first aid training, which is a brand new product, which you're not even certified to do, and maybe too.
But I'm going to be. Okay. I'm not old enough to teach it. So you teach the students how to administer teen mental health first aid, and so I think I put that in my report. I'm going to Austin to the mm-hmm. Mental Health Summit, First Aid Summit. And so they'll talk about what the next steps are to become a teen mental health first aid instructor.
So, you said you're not old enough to do that?
I'm too old to administer teen mental health. I'm not a teen.
I was just wondering, how old do you have to be?
No, see? A lot of people mistake. No, I have a 25-year-old son, so I'm not a teenager.
Kyle.
Chandra, under the new law, who specifically is required?
So it's teachers and other school personnel. So it's like all staff like in the school are under this new Mental Health Act.
And that's like every
employee. Like it's supposed to be like a part of your, have some type of mental health training. annually as a part of in-service. But they got to be able to pay for it, and that's the hard part about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, are there other concerns with, I mean, not just financially, but, I mean, for teachers particularly, they're under collectively bargained contracts. You can't force them to get extra
training. So that's why they went to the 6.5 hour mm-hmm. model, so that it can be within their contract, because they weren't doing it within the time frame, mm-hmm. because it's an 8 hour training. So the education module of it is 6.5 hours so that it can fit within those constraints that teachers were under, because that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
I simply wanted to ask, Elaine, how many different agencies are represented at the coalition? Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, they have over 150 people that come.
Yeah, but agencies, it's somewhere around 88 different agencies mm-hmm. in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I go pretty regular. I do most of the time when they meet to the crisis intervention team, mm-hmm. which involves police meeting who do crisis intervention training within their own police officers, mm-hmm. and then they get to know the various mental health agents and agencies. Mm-hmm. And I just continue to be impressed by the officers who attend that. They really care about not arresting people and being helpful to people. Mm-hmm. There's not enough of them. I mean, there are many other officers. They're not all in it. So, mm-hmm. but there's a fairly decent number. And what's really impressive is the number of agencies that are represented. Service points, mm-hmm. people who are involved in human service who kind of come to that and get to know the police officers. There's something very positive about that relationship that's developing there. Yeah. And also, Urbana is provided a person who's collects data. And Mark goes to these meetings regularly mm-hmm. also, and I'm always glad he's there because he's quite good at telling people what the mental health board's up to. Mm-hmm. I can never remember. but it's good. It's often hard to say positive things about the relationship between police and community. But this is one area in which the police do a surprisingly responsible, really good job. And if we could somehow figure out how to keep that going in a way that would multiply itself. I think if we could get similar kinds of collaboration from other service agents, it would be helpful. So anyway. Positive.
I mean, I think every institution or every school that has a resource officer, their resource officer, their social worker or counselor ought to go to the training together so that they have that better communication between the resource officer and the social worker or the counselor or the principal or whoever does the discipline, because it helps. It will help. Okay. So where are we? So approval of board meeting. Did we do that already? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can we, Stephanie? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Board announcements?
I might have one. I'll take Sandra's thunder. I'm sure Sandra, she sent out a note about everyone volunteering for the upcoming Disabilities Expo. It is a lot of fun.
It is.
Sandra is the volunteer coordinator, and so if you don't volunteer, she'll volunteer you.
So adjourn, move to adjourn? Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Have a wonderful rest of the day and take care.